Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
All right, Entree Architect community, it's time for Context and Clarity Live, where we spend an hour every Thursday afternoon searching for clarity around the things that matter most to you, the architect. And it doesn't matter if you're the employee of a firm or if you own your own firm. Maybe you dream of starting your own thing. Maybe you've even said that 2021's my year and you're on the runway to starting your own thing. Or maybe you have had a firm for a year or 10 years or 20 years and you're starting to rethink or reimagine what that firm could or maybe even should be. All of the topics that we cover fall under the broad umbrella of the business of architecture, and they're all the need-to-know topics for the success of architects just like you. If we've never met before, my name is Jeff Eccles, and what you're about to listen to is the audio recording of a conversation that my co-host Catherine McPhail and I had last week with our Context and Clarity guest. Every week we have a new guest and a new topic, so let's jump right into the conversation. All right, Entree Architect community, it's 4 p.m. Eastern, which means it's time for the Entree Architect Context and Clarity Live conversation for Thursday, December 16th, 2021. This is our last Context and Clarity Live of 2021, believe it or not. That's where we've made it to. If you're joining us, say hi. Let us know that you're here and let us know where you're joining the conversation from if we've never met before. My name is Jeff. I come here every weekday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern for one reason, so that we can find clarity around the things that matter most to you, the architect. Doesn't matter if you're the employee of a firm or you own your own firm. Maybe you've circled the date on the calendar and you said, you know what, 2022 is my year, and in January, I'm starting my own thing. Or maybe you have owned your own firm for a year or 10 years or 27 years, and you're starting to rethink or reimagine what that firm could or maybe even should be. All of the topics that we cover, one topic every day, they all fall under the broad umbrella of the business of architecture, and they're all the need-to-know topics for the success of small firm architects just like you. So thanks for joining us today. As always, for Context and Clarity Live, I am joined by my co-host, Catherine McPhail. Catherine, hi, how are you?
Hi, Jeff. I am great. How are you?
I'm well.
Good.
Catherine has finished her iced coffee now. We've been talking about coffee for a while.
Yep.
We're ready to go. Mm-hmm. I should have had an espresso and we could really be amped up and ready to go.
But doesn't 2022 just sound like the future?
It is the future.
It is the future, but I mean like way in the future, not in a couple weeks future.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure when we come back, we'll be back in full swing. We have several Context and Clarity events between now and the end of the year, but January 3rd, I think it is, Monday, we'll be back in full swing in the Context and Clarity thing, coming to you live from the metaverse.
Mm-mm.
Oh, maybe not. Okay. No.
That's sooner Catherine's than I thought.
Okay. I think that just got vetoed. it does absolutely sound like the Jetsons ought to be zooming around when we talk about 2022. I see Christian has joined us from Ithaca, New York. It looks like he's first in, so Christian wins today's crocheted bathtub. Thanks for joining us today, Christian. Tim Dearborn's joining us from Stockton, California. Mark LePage from North Carolina. Kurt's joining us from Twitch and Flint, Michigan. Glad you're joining us. And Benita's over there in Atlanta on LinkedIn. Glad you're joining us today, LinkedIn. Linked Benita. Benita N. I don't know. One of those. Thanks for joining us today. And everybody else that's joining us, I'm looking down the list, and it looks like everybody is showing up as themselves. If you happen to be on Facebook right now, and you look at your comment, and you say, hey, wait a minute, my name is not Facebook user, and my face doesn't look like that odd silhouette of a fake person, then the reason that's happening is that you're in a private Facebook group right now, and because of privacy policies, your name and likeness can't escape the group unless you allow it to, unless you give permission. So if you're showing up in that way and you want to change that, if you want to show up the way Scott Thrift is from San Francisco right now with his picture and his name there, then you need to go to chat.restream.io/FB, as in Facebook. And just a couple clicks, you'll give Facebook permission to connect with Restream, and you'll be off to the races. But having said that, I don't see anybody that's showing up right now as Facebook users. So at least for everybody that's here, you're safe. If you haven't said hi yet, say hi. Let us know that you're here. It's always fun to see where everybody is and who's here in these conversations. If this is your first time joining us for Context and Clarity Live, you're in for a treat, because this is the simulcast version of Context and Clarity, where we have a special guest who right now is waiting in the green room, eating all of the green M&Ms that we've left back there for them in the green room. And we're going to have a fascinating conversation, which I think is a great follow-up to our conversation last week with Michael E. Gerber, the author and or co-author of the entire E-Myth franchise. Last week, Michael Gerber challenged us to think differently, to think about the future of what the business of architecture, the practice of architecture is. And I think this is the perfect follow-up to that conversation. So again, thanks to everybody that's out there and has joined us. If you haven't said hi yet, say hi. Let us know that you're here, and let us know where you're joining the conversation from. And let's get this conversation started. We may be running out of green M&Ms by now. I don't know. I don't know how much our guest eats when it comes to green M&Ms. So we better get to it.
Yeah, it could just be our supplies running low. It is the last show of the year.
It is the last show of the year. Hard. And as a good host, you never want to run out of green M&Ms. So we better get to it here. Our guest today has spent a career immersed in innovation and thought leadership related to the design and construction of housing. She's a writer and a collaborator who's operated in the overlap of the real-world Venn diagram of the most innovative ideas and people in the housing industry. She's the Vice President of Ambassador and Industry Partner Programs at BuildXact, a construction management software company based in Melbourne, Australia. Jennifer Castenson, welcome to Context and Clarity Live.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me. Super excited. And if there were green M&Ms here, which is in my house, I would have crushed them all.
Well, that's good to know. That's a good trivia question. Next week on Tuesday, the 21st, we're having the Entree Architect Context and Clarity holiday party. That may just be our first trivia question.
Which one? I have to write that down so I can get it right. Green M&Ms. I'm writing it down.
What would Jennifer Castenson do with all the green M&Ms in the green?
She would crush them, but I'm not sure what that means. Does that mean you would eat them, or you would just
they would have been gone?
Them?
I would have.
Oh, you would have crushed them that way.
I would not. That would be like M&M abuse.
Yeah, I was confused. I'm glad we cleared that up.
You don't waste M&Ms. I mean, that's especially the green ones.
And I really hope that if you do leave them, they're peanut M&Ms.
Yeah, I always imagine them being peanut M&Ms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could certainly
much
be
better that way. Yeah. <That's>, put that in the right, trivia question too, please.
Yep. We're, got it. So for those of you that have just joined us, we're going to have an entire conversation about innovating with M&Ms today. That's where we're headed right now. But in all seriousness, it's great to have you here. Some of you know that I teach a pro practice class, and we do a special project during the class, and it culminates with what I call Shark Tank. It's our pitch night, and Jennifer was one of our sharks this week. So I appreciate you for doing that as well.
Yeah, no, that was a great opportunity, and I really appreciate that there are people like you innovating in the space and bringing that to the forefront. I mean, it needs to be encouraged on all fronts, right? Just supporting people to have new ideas and bring new ideas and energy and passion into the industry. I have a lot of enthusiasm for that.
Yeah, I mean, you basically built your career around this idea of innovation, right?
Yeah, I hang my hat on it. That's true.
So, with that, and all of these, all this time, and all these roles that you've played, and pulling together events and everything else, all kind of swirling around the idea of innovation. Maybe we ought to start with, how do you define innovation?
Well, I think it's basically doing something that differently. And I think that it's a different approach to something, to a challenge or a solution that's out there. And like you said, I have focused on it. I got the opportunity, which I just really cherish, to work at what was formerly Hanley Wood and now is Zonda, but they publish Architect Magazine, Builder Magazine, journals like Instruction, Multifamily Executive, Affordable Housing Finance, and work across all those different verticals in the industry to look at what were the biggest challenges facing the industry overall, and then trying to bring forth the innovators who were trying to solve those issues through content and through event programming. So exciting. And I got the opportunity to meet so many great people who were making an impact. And some of them had great ideas that couldn't go anywhere because, you know, for a variety of reasons. But I think there's still so a huge runway for innovation in the architecture and residential space.
That's, to me, that's one of the most interesting aspects of your career, right? As I look at it, you know, from the outside, is, you know, it's really easy for us, whoever we are, whatever we do, to stay in our silo, right? Well, I'm an architect, I focus on architecture, or I'm a contractor and focus on building things. But when you have been putting together these conferences and the content, all those things that you talked about, as you said, you're really making connections across the entire industry, if we can say it that way. And so I love this idea of, hey, you know, as an architect, you may not be able to innovate to the appropriate solution on your own. It may take this partnership with somebody else, whether it's a builder, an insurance company, a lender, or whatever. What are some of the most exciting things that you've run across over the past few years that you would call innovative in this space? Do you have favorites?
I do, but I want to back up for a minute because what you said just kind of struck a chord with me, which is architects who focus on architecture, which I don't think exists anymore. I think architects and builders and, I mean, even contractors but everyone is now required to have key competency in, the local policy, in, health and wellness and codes and sustainability and resiliency and many other things, which for me, you know, I had that awesome job at Zonda and I was presented with an opportunity to go to Build Exact, which you were talking about. I'm now there, which is a construction management, project management software. And now I'm really excited to use that as a tool to help the architects and builders to take away some of those responsibilities and kind of de-risk the process and be able to give them the opportunity not to have to be experts in those areas, but to do like architects focus on architecture and have the builders focus on building, de-risk the process and use the software as a service or a tool that they can, then they can innovate in the areas where they're, where they have the expertise and not have to focus on some of those details, or the things that they're not experts in.
Well, let's go down that road then for a while. And I love that idea, right? It's delving into, or maybe even finding new or exploring new expertise. But what do you see out there in the world, so to speak, in terms of maybe the best partnerships? You know, how are people finding each other to connect? You know, the builder, contractor, architect, others. How are they finding each other, and how are they developing these partnerships that leads to innovation with each playing to their own strengths, maybe?
Yeah, so I see it's happening in a variety of ways. I do think that there is, we have not as an industry created a space that is like a maker space. And it's something that we tried to do when I was at Zonda. We tried to create this event that was called HIVE, which was Housing Innovation Vision Economics. Now at BuildASVAC, my role is focused on getting to a point in 2 or 3 years where we host an event for dealers and builders together where they can really collaborate. But until then, we'll be putting them together within the software and allowing them to interact, and we'll be tracking how they interact and then sharing that with the industry at large. But I mean, I think there are some people who are at the forefront and have figured out how to make connections in the industry. And I, you know, some of them, you know, come to mind, and they do it at events. They reach out on LinkedIn. They're doing research. They're writing about it. They're sharing it with people. And I think the key is sharing and transparency, because the more you share, the more comes back to you. And, you know, any idea, I've worked with several people who are willing to just be open books and share the innovation that they have. And it's amazing to me the kind of snowball effect of that, and how many other people are able to jump in and offer their services. They all of a sudden have manufacturers who want to be part of a pilot project, who want to layer in and, you know, write a white paper. And I've seen that happen in several different capacities over the past, you know, 8 years.
As you were talking, and this came up this morning too. So for those of you out there, whether you're listening to this on the podcast or you're live with us now, if you don't know this already, we start out our conversations every morning on the Clubhouse app at 9 a.m. Eastern. We call it our half hour coffee talk. So this morning we previewed this conversation, and somebody said something, I don't remember what it was. And as you were talking, it reminded me of the book, Where Good Ideas Come From. Have you ever read that book? It's Stephen Johnson, Where Good Ideas Come From, The Natural History of Innovation. As you were talking about that transparency and that openness, you know, he talks, I don't remember the terms off the top of my head anymore. It's been a while, but, he talks about proximity and parallels and basically rubbing off on each other. And that's exactly what you're describing is what's in that book. That's a good read for anybody, out there that likes to, think about innovation or aspire to innovation. Stephen Johnson is the author, Where Good Ideas Come From, The Natural History of Innovation. So at BuildExact, you know, it's a software mainly for contractors, right?
So it is for builders, dealers, and contractors, remodelers. And we actually just did a collaboration with Epicor and their BizTrack system, which is an ERP. And so it actually is integrates our software with theirs, so that when a builder places an order, it gives the exact pricing from the dealer. So it is more transparency and accuracy than these builders have been able to have before. And in today's market, it's huge. And in general, it just takes something that was a 4-hour process and makes it a 1-hour process. So another way that collaboration, just another example of collaboration that leads to innovation in the industry. And this is just announced like a few weeks ago. So it's super exciting.
Okay. And for those of us out here that don't know what it is, what's an ERP?
Oh, that is the dealer's pricing system. It's a cost system.
Okay.
And it obviously is an acronym that I'm not thinking of at the moment, but
it's an ERP.
Yeah. And yeah, so, and Timothy's asking where architects, and actually I know Mark LePage was in here, but I am working with Mark LePage right now to validate, a plugin for, architects in the system. So we'd like to bring in floor plans and architects into that process, because actually I was visiting with a dealer 2 months ago and they had an architect on staff, and then they realized they just couldn't support an architect on staff. It was just too much for them because they're trying to run their business. And just like I was saying before, you know, dealers need to focus on being dealers and those operations. So trying to figure out how we can have architects' floor plans already built in, and then all of the product list is associated with that. And then they can, you know, kind of like add it to a cart. A customer chooses that floor plan. It goes into our software. It goes direct to the dealer. All the product is picked, and then the builder can focus on the house. You know, and again, talking about how we can help the builder process, we could have floor plans that are net zero or all electric, or fire resilient, things that help the builder provide solutions for the customers, you know, focus on health or well-being or whatever it is, without having to be an expert in that area. So we could have architects who are experts in that type of design, provide those designs, have the product list built out, the product lists go direct to the dealer. And so it's just, creating a more seamless process. Thank you, Benita, for enterprise resource planning.
That's part of the community. They're going to figure it out. They're going to find the answer.
Love
whether
it.
We've got it or
love
not.
Love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think, and Mark is, Mark LePage has commented this as well. He says, imagine if architects could access that estimating cost data. You know, as you're describing that, that's exactly what is coming to my mind, because I'm having conversations with architects around the world that are scared of cost, right? You know, they're designing something that costs twice as much today as it did 24 months ago, something like that. I think collaborating so that as you're designing, you have some idea of what the implications are. You know, it's all got to be reducing friction eventually for the client. You know, no
well, Jeff, I think another thing too that I'm sure you've studied before is the network effect. So,
right.
Yeah, so that's something that we're very, very focused in on is, you know, what does that mean? And that means that the more people are using your system, the more value it brings to all of the users. So, the more dealers that we have that are using it brings in more builders. And as the builders use it, it brings in more intelligence to the system. And it just brings everyone more value. And again, if we add architects to that mix as well, again, bring more value to all the users.
Yeah, I think on a, you know, a 30,000 foot level, I mean, that's the exact argument as well, just simply for collaboration, being transparent and collaborative. We talked earlier this week about what excites you about architecture and the profession, maybe your work. I think it was Tuesday that we used that as our topic. And more than one person said the increased amount of collaboration that they see in a community of architects, which this is predominantly a community of small firm architects. But I think just from that level, being collaborative, being open to sharing ideas and information starts to tap into that network effect, gaining knowledge from other places.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
We've been talking about innovation and ways to innovate and, things like that, but maybe to take half a step back, why do we need to innovate? I mean, is it necessary?
So I think it's necessary for us to evolve as a species. It's necessary. As an industry, we keep layering on complication. What's innovative is trying to be simple, trying to take out some of that complexity. Really needs to happen, in order to get more of the housing supply that we need and to make it more affordable, which are just critical issues today. And another critical issue is the extreme weather events we're having. And how do we respond to that? We have to be innovative. We have to start thinking together. You asked before who I think is, has some of the best, most innovative projects. I'm going to be talking about collaborations. I'm really excited about this project that was brought forth by Procter & Gamble, lo and behold, but it's called the 50 Liter Home. And they are doing this initiative with a number of partners, including Kohler, I shouldn't say anymore because I don't want to get them wrong. Some global partners in to show how we can live off of 50 liters of water in our homes. And that's such an important issue with water scarcity in a lot of places. Even here in the US, there's water scarcity. And then also it's super important because they just put out a report that shows how much carbon we use heating up the water in our homes. And they're calling it just an invisible issue. It is really, really important for us to focus and create collaborations like that. Thank you for putting out that website. It's such a cool project. But it is incredibly important. And that is a really cool example of collaboration and innovation.
For those of you who are listening, those of you who have joined us live, if you look at the bottom left of your screen right now, there's a URL for the 50 Liter Home Project. It's 50lhome.org is the website there that the project Jennifer was just talking about. And I'm going back to what you said several minutes ago about, basically you can't exist in your silo anymore, right? There has to be this collaboration. I love ideas like this. And, you said Procter & Gamble, and I don't know how many people, I kind of chuckled because I know where you are and I know where Procter & Gamble is, but I'm sure there are a lot of people in the audience that went Procter & Gamble. That doesn't seem like architecture, but that's the point, right?
Yeah. So I actually found out about this project. What Jeff is alluding to is that I live in Cincinnati and Procter & Gamble is based in Cincinnati, which, every person, I would say every third person that I meet here works at P&G, Procter & Gamble. But the reason why I even knew about the project was because they had a virtual display of the 50 liter home prototype at the Consumer Electronics Show last year, which is the first time I heard about it. So it was really cool, and I'm actually continuing to track it. And one of the things that I'm working on at the moment, I'm a contributing writer for Forbes focused on innovation in housing. But I'm writing an article on the 50 liter home right now. So I hope to have it published in the next couple of weeks, but, on some of the initiatives that they have going right now.
Yeah. So if you're an architect, you know, there's, you know, a couple dozen or more, live in our audience right now and more that will listen to this or watch this in the future. But, what is step number one? There are a lot of us, right? 20 months or so ago, things shut down and people shut their offices down or were sent home, and we've been separated a lot and in our own bubbles a lot. So if you're an architect, how do you get out of that bubble and kind of break out into this space and find collaborators?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think everybody's going to have their own unique style to do it. And I think you can do it in different ways. I don't think you necessarily have to be an extrovert. I think it's just sharing your ideas. You can share your ideas through Mark's platform on Entre Architect. You can share your ideas through LinkedIn. You can write about them on LinkedIn. You can just, there's so many different unique ways. If you do want to, I would say you can join local groups, and be able to talk to people, and even join groups that are a little bit different. They don't have to be in your vertical. So join the local group of general contractors. Join the local group of builders, the Home Builders Association in your area, to share ideas and get new ideas, and be able to create collaborations or partnerships. And not necessarily, they don't have to be formal, or just, it could just be gathering ideas. I think there's so many different unique ways, and it can be totally based on your own style and personality.
I think that's a great point. And for any of you that read the book that I mentioned before, Where Did Good Ideas Come From? I think there's a story in there about scientists sitting at different tables eating lunch, you know, wherever scientists work, and the trade-off and the exchange of ideas that leads to big innovation. It doesn't have to be some grand gesture.
Yeah. But I have to say, though, working in this space for a number of years, so many of the great ideas and so much of the innovation is driven by architects. You know, and I think that architects are such a huge force, change agent for the industry. I know that, you know, many of the architects that I know are the ones that are driving the pilot projects, the ones that are, who are doing the research, who are publishing the research, who are looking at the different ways that some of the first people I knew researching COVID were architects. And you know, how it impacts society. And they weren't just doing surface and talking about just design. They were looking at culturally, and how it's going to impact society. It amazes me. And I go back time and time again to some of the architects I know to understand what they're working on in order to inform myself about what are the trends in the industry and where we're headed. It's so exciting. There's a handful of people that I just, always just totally geek out on when I get to talk to them and hear from them.
So where do those ideas come from? Is it simply identifying? I mean, COVID's obviously a big problem, but is it simply looking around and identifying a problem that needs to be solved?
So that's a good question. I mean, I think what we've found, and the responsibility that we as a society have put on architects, have made them the experts in this area. You know, if you look at some of the largest firms, SOM and Perkins & Will and Eastman, all of those firms, big, they have R&D departments that are looking at all of these societal issues, and breaking them out into how they impact the built environment and how can we change the built environment to manage these challenges or be the best that we can be. And I mean, if you look at, so, I mean, I've seen several projects where we're looking at how we're building homes or housing for Mars or for the moon. They're looking into the future and how are we going to be doing all these things? It's incredible. And architects are doing that. We're not leaning on, some huge aeronautical groups to do that. These are architects. They're solving for these issues. It's incredible.
Yeah. I mentioned my group of students a little bit earlier, and that's where we start our project is, you know, I keep it, you know, they're students, and they've never been exposed to quote unquote business ideas before because they're in architecture school and that doesn't happen for some reason. And so we start with, you know, what's a problem that you see that needs to be solved, right? And hopefully something that you're passionate about, because that's going to care. If we're going to design housing for Mars, we've got to be pretty passionate about it because it's going to take a lot of brain power and effort to carry us through that process. And so it's, you know, in that small context with the students, it's what's a problem that you see that needs to be solved, where you can think of a solution. Other people agree that it's a problem that needs to be solved, and eventually we'll buy into your solution. And that's how we start that project. And I think to me that's got a very, basic need to it, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, making things up, innovating for innovation's sake. You know, does that exist? I don't know. is it possible to innovate for innovation's sake?
I'm not sure. It doesn't feel right.
No. Catherine, you say no on that?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of similar to the, does your business always have to be growing question to me, which we talked about last week, I think. So I don't know. Maybe we do innovate maybe we do. Do you think they ever do that? Anybody ever does that? That's their job. I mean, that's your job.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we're getting into the philosophical, I think, definitely. But I think, to me, innovation is about, you know, like you said, Jennifer, it's about creating change. Why would we change? You know, what needs to change? And I think that need to change or that desire to change is always going to be what spurs the innovation. So maybe it's not possible to innovate without at least a desire. I don't know. We're going to get into deep philosophy. We're going to have.
I think you could trip Jack on Andy. Innovation.
Say that again.
And I said I think you can trip on innovation, but I like your reference to Jack Handy.
We're going deep.
Because hey, free dummy.
That's excellent. Apologies to some of you that may not understand.
Yeah, I don't stay up that late.
Yeah. Well, you can Google Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy.
Well, I do know about Deep Thoughts. Yep. They are deep.
So I think I actually curated a story, I think earlier this week that had my mind spinning a little bit, but, just about how 3D printing will be taking over. And we have all these, you know, we have all the supply chain. We actually, Icon is building the first 3D printed community in Austin, which should be opening in, early next year. And they're also one of the ones that are looking at housing or 3D printing housing for Mars. But this story was talking about how every community will have a 3D printer. And by community, they just mean like, township. So that 3D printer could be, you know, the source of the product that community needs. Which solves for so many different issues, right? And we could use that, and there's still maybe 10% of what we would need. We'd still need to order or have already made or whatever it is. But every community would have a 3D printer, and then everyone, in their house would have a 3D printer. So you would be printing things in your house, and then the community would also be providing things. which would totally disrupt the supply chain, but totally makes sense for what a future could be. My husband is actually a mechanical engineer, and he designs things, and then he prints them out in the 3D printer, and he's like, oh, this is what we need. Or he might have to fudge it a little bit and figure out, that it needs a little bit of a change. And not only does he use it for work, but if something happens in our house and something breaks and we're like, oh, this broke. And he's like, well, let me see that. I think I can print that part. So he takes it apart. He prints out the part that we need and fixes whatever's in our house. So it's becoming a reality. GE, Aeronautics is actually another company that's here in Cincinnati, and they're starting to 3D print turbines. So, what else can be, and when is that in our future, and how are we starting to think about that? And one more example, sorry. And this is directly related to housing. There's a company called Veev, total innovator. They are doing prefabricated homes. They are 3D printing the finishes on the walls. So like you can say, this is what I want on the walls. This is the type of finish that I want on the wall. And it's 3D printed and it lasts for a long time. It can be the design, it can be what you want. It could be wood pattern, whatever it is. But really changing the way we think about how housing can be produced. It's fascinating.
Going even further down the technology road, I suppose. What have you seen, or what do you know, or what are you studying, if anything, about AI in design or in construction?
Yeah, so I've seen a couple groups that are starting to use, and this is, again, coming from the architecture space, starting to use AI to share designs on a global platform on very large projects. So that's kind of what I've seen using VR and doing that. What else have I seen? I don't know. Not a lot. I don't know. So I think there's a little bit that's in the part of marketing housing to consumers, home buyers. I think there's a little bit in the aspects of the rental community, but I don't think I've seen a lot of traction. I don't know. Sorry,
that's all right. I mean, it's another one of those elephants in the room, right? That's at some point it's going to we're going to encounter it, whatever that means. But as we're talking about this, does innovation always have to be about or driven by technology?
No. That's a solid no. I mean, it could be building code. It could be the way, there's so many different things. And policy change, we could use so much innovation and policy change. It could be zoning. I mean, it was very innovative when the first town got rid of all single family zoning so that we could start building more density and we could really change the shape of housing affordability in certain areas. So, yeah, it's not always technology. It can be in any shape or form. It could just be who you start collaborating with. It's who you could start talking with. There are definitely many different ways to slice it.
I was thinking about AI in relation to architecture, and if that does become a reality, it would seem like architects would be involved with developing that AI, right? So then would it be bad? I know people are, that maybe came up as one of the fears this week, talking about AI taking our jobs, but I would assume that someone programming that is going to be in the design field.
I don't know.
That would give us something to do.
Yeah, right.
I, I think it's like anything. I mean, it's a tool, right? So how are we going to use the tool? How much control are we going to have? Somebody's got to create the thing, like you said.
Yeah.
One of our goals, and I said this, I think, yesterday, or one of my goals, at least, for the near future in Context and Clarity Live, is to have conversations about AI, one of the things, and then also the this is going to make some people's hair stand on end. A lot of people's hair stand on end. Talk about NFTs and blockchain and metaverse and what that could have to do with the future of architecture. We'll explore those things. Are you running across anything in those realms, Jennifer, at this point?
Not really. I mean, I have heard someone who is working on selling the virtual real estate. I'm not super excited about that. So
that seems to be the general sentiment around the Context and Clarity community. So I'm just interested because there's a lot of speculation. Literally and figuratively speaking about that. And, is it really basically video game land or NFTs really just a way to market your albums, that kind of thing? I want to know specifically what a realistic view of how are these things or are these things going to impact the profession of architecture or, this innovation that we're talking about. So, that's on the list for 2022. For those of you that are out there, we're going to dig into these things.
I agree with you, Catherine. That seems very futuristic. 2022. I don't know why. It's like, it feels like 10 years away from 21. figure that out.
Yeah.
I don't know
why either, but it does. It just feels like, when I grew up in the 70s, when I was a little kid in the 70s, thinking about 2022 was just like the Jetsons, definitely flying cars for sure. No, there are no flying. I think flying cars are just a bad idea, but the rest of the Jetsons stuff is actually happening. And as I've said,
flying cars are a great idea, but mostly if it's just me that has one.
Well, right. It would have to be just me or just you and not everybody.
right.
Yeah. Be a mess.
Okay, well, we're gonna have one flying car.
Well, she can have one in Ohio. I'll have one in Massachusetts.
Okay.
All right.
Fair enough. One per state, apparently. I don't know what we're doing about. I don't know what we're doing about interstate travel here, but flying cars. What in your work at Build Exact, which I agree with, I think it was Mark earlier said, wouldn't it be awesome if architects could have access to real time pricing or you create a team that has a builder and others where the real time pricing is coming into your network. What else do you see as really practical steps, practical innovations? Even if it's simply near future kinds of things, there's a lot. I mean, I was having a conversation with Kurt earlier today, actually. I was down in Cincinnati a few weeks ago and, I had a speaking engagement down there for a group of architects and one of them said that they couldn't get bar joists. I think he said until 2023 because Amazon Projects had sucked all of those out of the supply chain. And several people in the Entree Architect community said, dock levelers and, all these other things. So we've got supply chain issues, like you said. Everybody's like out of their mind busy, in a lot of areas. What are some practical things that you see going on right now that are applicable in 2022, the distant future of 2022. Is there anything that's just sort of down and dirty? Hey, this is a great change that's just been made or that's coming.
So, I mean, I think it's unique situations, right? So, each firm really needs to look at what's going on within their organization, how they can innovate. I think there are things that are, I'm very excited about, which again, is something that's super easy to change, is workforce development, diversity and inclusion, the ESG initiative. I'm also super excited about a lot of investors getting behind that. I think that's incredible, something that needs to happen. Now, it's hard to say whether that's going to be an easy change or not in both of those realms. But I think that specifically with diversity and inclusion, I think that's a super easy change. Look at your board, look at who you're working with, who you're hiring, making sure that there are minorities represented. I think also just looking at solutions like I was just talking about, making sure that you are looking at technology in ways that can drive efficiencies for your organization so that you can bring value to other parts of the process. So I was talking about our Build Exact software, how it can help the builders and the remodelers and contractors and dealers and let them focus on other tasks that hopefully will bring about more sustainable, more affordable solutions, and elevate the industry at large. So I think there's a lot of different ways to look at it, and it's pretty unique to each situation.
So it seems like the bottom line for some of these things is that a lot of us have to get out of our shells and concentrate on team building. We can't, we can't just rely on ourselves and our own knowledge. Of course, that would sort of be the antithesis of innovation, I suppose. But get out and, you know, if let me go this direction with it, right? We've got the traditional design, bid, build model. And this may be a whole can of worms that I'm opening up now, but we've got this traditional design, bid, build model of, you know, obviously design and construction, relationships between architect, contractor, and owner. Does innovation kill that model? Right? Does the necessity to build teams at an early stage kill that model?
So I don't want to say I hope so, but kind of. So I think that, you know, even with, I've been really paying attention to modular construction and prefabrication and studying that a lot and writing about it for Forbes and so on and so forth. And in that process, it takes a lot of collaboration in before you get started, because once you get started, it's not, you're not turning around. Like, there aren't change orders like you can do when you have on-site construction. So, it's, that also is just kind of changing the model of how people operate and how things are built, and in a good way, because if we do it that way, there are huge efficiencies and huge cost savings, and we can provide more affordable housing for, or more affordable projects. Hospitality is one of the industries that's really leveraging modular and prefabrication. So, and that's just a good example of how that collaboration needs to take place and how it's changing the design process.
I think I'm with you. I think the hopefully that is headed the way the design bid build format is or model is headed the way of the dinosaur. I know we're right on the edge of the top of the hour here, so we'll have to wrap this up. But as we head there, as we wrap up this conversation, what's your number one tip, maybe, or top three tips, or whatever you want to do, for small firm architects that are looking out you know, at the prospects of the future of their practice and how they serve clients and you know, what the business looks like. Do you have any advice for small firm architects?
Sure. I think you hit the nail on the head. Don't isolate yourself. And then the other thing is Mark LePage put a link in the chat to be part of an event that we're working on together. That would be a great way to talk to others, learn from others, share ideas and have great conversations. But I think just in general, like being part of a group like that, and it doesn't necessarily mean a live event. Like I said, your solution needs to be custom to you and your needs as a small firm architect. And you can create groups online to learn from. You can find information online to learn from. But I would say also don't stop reading and learning. Like I read a book a week and there's so much to learn. And even if you just choose to do a book a month, please just keep reading or choose a podcast or do something that helps you think outside of your day-to-day role. That's critical.
Well, you really opened the door for that. So, I mentioned, I think it was yesterday on our Context and Clarity conversation that starting in 2022, we will have our Context and Clarity book club once a month. So at the beginning of a month, we'll announce a book. And I think what I penciled in on the calendar is the last Friday of the month, we'll have our Context and Clarity book club. So if you only participate in that, you should be able to get 12 books in 2022. So that's great advice.
What's the first book? I got to get on that.
It's not January yet. We'll announce that at the beginning of the month. we haven't picked a book yet. But I feel so strongly about what you're saying about reading or listening to podcasts or whatever. I just want to share, and I shared this the other day, that in 2019, I set that goal. I realized I hadn't been reading for a long time. And so I set a goal of reading a book a month. And I got to the end of 2019 and realized that I was halfway through my 30th book in the year. And that, I guarantee you, was the best goal I ever met. And obviously just blew out of the water, exceeded. I wholeheartedly endorse what Jennifer is talking about there. Keep learning, keep reading. Catherine had up on the screen there a moment ago, the event that Jennifer referenced is the Entree Architect Annual Meeting coming in autumn of 2022 in Austin, Texas. So, mark that. Just block out the entire fall, and plan to meet us in Austin, next year, 2022. That will be a, very good event. And as I mentioned earlier, another event that's coming up much, much sooner next Tuesday is the Entree Architect Context and Clarity Holiday Party. So, make sure that you find the Eventbrite link for that and register for that so that through the magic of Eventbrite, there you go. Thank you, Catherine. They're on your screen, entreearchitect.com/holidayparty2021. Through the magic of Eventbrite, you register and it sends you all of the Zoom info that you need to join us for that holiday party. And you're all invited to join us for that. It'll be a good time. Maybe Jennifer will.
With lots of M&Ms.
With lots of M&Ms. All the M&Ms.
Caramel M&Ms are the best M&Ms. Have you had those, the caramel M&Ms?
I've not.
Oh, those are good. I still favor the peanut.
Yeah, no, but you know, they have to innovate, right? So they have to come up with new flavors of M&Ms all the time.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if you want innovation, go to try the dark chocolate ones.
No. I will not be
no?
Doing
okay.
That. No. Do you like dark chocolate, Jeff? I know you're a fan of chocolate, but I didn't know if you like dark.
I essentially bleed espresso and dark chocolate, so yeah.
Nice.
An image.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's an image. Yeah.
Some of you talk about vegetables. I'm pretty sure that dark chocolate comes from vegetables, so I'm good. Well, with that, Jennifer, thank you very much for joining us for this conversation and sharing your knowledge and experience with us. I also invite everybody to keep an eye out for Jennifer's articles in Forbes magazines, because they're about innovation, as you can imagine. They're really, she finds some of the most interesting things to write about in our world. So thanks for all that work that you're doing and the work that you're doing with Entree Architect as well. And appreciate you sharing all of this about innovation today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for all the work that you guys are doing. And I would like to say thanks for the M&Ms. Maybe next time.
Well, I'll drop a package off next time in
Cincinnati. All right. Sounds great.
And for all of you that are out there listening to the podcast, thanks for listening. You will notice a format change in the Context and Clarity podcast in early 2022. That's exciting. We'll talk more about that at a later date. And those of you that are joining us live, as always, thank you. I appreciate all of you for joining us, for all of your questions and comments, and for making Context and Clarity a thing, because without you, no one, we're 416 or 17 conversations in at this point. No one, not even my mother, would have stuck around to hear me talk 416 or 17 times. You all made this a thing and gave us the ability and a reason to talk to Jennifer Castenson today. So thank you for making Context and Clarity a thing. Be well, be safe, take some time to breathe and relax and find a way to rejuvenate, because we're going to do this all again tomorrow. Tomorrow, in Context and Clarity, is our Mystery Member Spotlight. It's our last one of 2021. Before we head into 2022. So join us. The guessing begins at 4 p.m. Eastern. Who is our final mystery member spotlight for 2021? You got to show up to find out. All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day, a great evening, a great night, wherever you are in the world. And I hope that I'll see you all somewhere sometime soon. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Well, there you have it. What did you think of that conversation? Hopefully there was some big takeaway that will help you this week with your business. If there was, let me know. DM me on Instagram or on Twitter. You can find me on all the socials at Jeff_Eccles. So send me a message and let me know what your takeaway was. And if you want more conversations like this, subscribe to the Context and Clarity podcast and leave us an honest review and rating. Those things really help us get the message out and help us help more architects just like you. Oh, and follow Context and Clarity on Instagram as well, so you can get a heads up on everything that's coming up. In our next episode, Catherine will join me again along with a special guest, or will it be guests from the Context and Clarity community, so we can break this conversation down. It will be Context and Clarity backstage, so to speak. So join us as we all share our biggest takeaways and look for ways to apply what we heard in today's conversation to our own businesses. And if you love content like this, check out Gable Media. It's a multimedia network for people that care about the built environment, and it's the home of Context and Clarity. With Gable's growing family of podcasts and video channels, I know that you'll find something there that interests you. You can learn more at GableMedia.com. That's GABLMedia.com. And finally, if today's topic is of particular interest to you and you'd like to dig deeper into it, then join me over in the Entree Architect Community Facebook group. That's where every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern, I host Context and Clarity conversations, and we take these topics and we dig deeper. We have a conversation in real time to try to find more clarity around the things that matter most to you. So thanks for listening. I hope our time together has inspired you to think about your community, your practice, and how you can support those around you. Catherine and I will be back for our next episode. And in the meantime, I hope you'll join me and the Entree Architect community on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern, so that we can help each other find more clarity around the topics that matter most, no matter what your context may be.
From historic homes to modern architecture, Brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And Brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but Brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with Brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.